Omo gyanati miran tasya gyanam jana shalakaya chakshurin miritam jena tasvaya shri gurave nama shri chaitanya manapistam sthapitam jena bhutale svayam rupam kadamayam kadhati shukadavtika pandehang shri guru shri jata padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavascha Shri Rupam Sabrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Jitamstam Sajiva Shadvaitam Shavakutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Radita Sri Vishakandatam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bhanta Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamsha Gaurangi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vansha Kolpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Pyevacha Padita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I think of Satsrup Maharaj as being part of an older generation of devotees. These days, you know, I get introduced as one of the senior most disciples of His Divine Grace. And in one sense, you say, well, we're all senior most. You know, it's 30, someone's 35 years, someone's 40 years, someone's 37, 38. There's not a whole heck of a lot of difference there. Satsrup Maharaj must have joined maybe a year and a half, 2 years before I did. But that's a huge difference. Between 1966 and 1968, that's a big difference. Between maybe 1972 and 1974, it's not such a big difference. But there's a group of devotees who joined Srila Prabhupada actually at the very beginning. You know, they introduce me and say, join at the very beginning. But actually, Satsrup Maharaj was at the very beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement. And when I joined, those devotees had a lot of first-hand things to say. You know, we all have Prabhupada says, and Prabhupada once did this and that, but there's actually a small group of devotees back then who had so much association with Prabhupada. And of those, Satsrup Maharaj had a very clear picture of what Prabhupada was teaching. there were other devotees who, well, some of them were really had no idea what Prabhupada was teaching. and some had, you know, pretty good grasp on things. But Satsrup Maharaj was particularly clear in understanding the seriousness of Krishna consciousness and the gravity of what Prabhupada was teaching. And especially, well, in regard to two things I think of. One was austerity, and the other is fidelity. Those two things, especially, and austerity, fidelity, and dedication. Those three things. Maybe I'll talk about austerity first. When I first went up to Boston, right after I was initiated, actually it was by Satsrup Maharaj's kindness that I got to go to Boston and be with Srila Prabhupada right after I was initiated. Govinda Dasi was Prabhupada's cook. Gorsundar was his assistant, and she was this kind of frail creature, so she needed some help with the cooking. So the question was who would go, and it would either be Devananda. They were thinking of Devananda, one of my godbrothers, who was a pretty good cook. And Satsrup Maharaj said, what about this boy? He could go. I'd never cooked anything in my life. Anyway, they decided that Prabhupada was going to be in Boston 4 weeks, so I could go for the first 2 weeks, and Devananda could go for the second 2 weeks, and if I failed, then Devananda could go earlier. So that's how I got to go to Boston and suffer. Because they were living in Glenville Avenue in this little storefront in Boston. And Boston's a cold town, in the winter especially. It gets very cold. It's a freezy place. Now, that wasn't exactly the winter, but it was, I guess, the end of winter. Maybe spring was just starting. Anyway, Boston doesn't get warm soon. And they were... In New York, you know, we lived simply, but in Boston they lived austerely. Satsrup Maharaj was working for the welfare department at that time. That was another thing I think Srila Prabhupada liked about him. He was one of the few men who had a job. He was working in New York City, then he transferred to Boston and continued working there. Basically, his salary was supporting the temple. And he would... He lived on a shelf, actually. There was a room, was it, I guess it was off the kitchen or part of the kitchen. And you climbed up this ladder and there was literally like a shelf there. It would be, it's a shelf, that's what it was. It was a shelf. And that's where he lived. He had a, you know, his bed there on this shelf. And that was it. That was his 6 feet of off the ground. And they used to, their eating was very austere, and especially the shower. There was no proper shower. After all, this was a storefront, so it didn't have proper living accommodations. So they had an old bathtub that they'd put on cinder blocks in the basement, and into that bathtub ran a black utility hose with freezing cold water. And that was it. And I think it was the dirtiest 2 weeks I ever spent in my life. It was really rough. But they used to enjoy. Satsrup Maharaj was committed to living very simply, very austerely. His eating was austere. There wasn't scope for sense gratification there. It was all devotional service. And he continued in that way, always being deliberately go out of your way and suffer kind of austere, but just don't spend for sense gratification. And if you don't go out of your way, if you don't make some effort for sense gratification, then you probably don't get much. And that was his approach. That was austerity, fidelity. We used to speculate a lot back in those days, a tradition that continues to the modern day. But Satsrup Maharaj was always very chaste to what Prabhupada had said. It was always... things had to be backed up either with something Prabhupada had said or with something from scripture. Not everybody read scripture back then, but he was very serious about reading the books. And he used to, when he would speak about Krishna in authentic ways, following Prabhupada, really representing Prabhupada's line, Prabhupada's point of view, Prabhupada's Siddhanta, the conclusions of Krishna consciousness, authentically, not making up so many things, just presenting as it was. Repeating, Prabhupada said, simple thing, just repeat what you've heard. But we all had ideas, and we were all smart guys, and we all had our own ways. But Satsuma Maharshi was very, as we say, parampara. He would present things as they were. So much so that to this day, there's so many things I can't remember whether I heard them from Prabhupada or I heard them from Satsuma Maharshi. You know, I just don't make the distinction practically, because if I heard it from Satsuma Maharshi, it's as good as if I heard it from Prabhupada, reliable. You know, you hear from some people, you know Prabhupada didn't say it. If he said it, Prabhupada didn't. If he says Prabhupada said it, he for sure didn't say it. But Satsuma Maharshi, you could bank on it that it would be presented faithfully as it was. So there's so many things like that I just don't remember anymore, because I, you know, accepted it just sight unseen, as they say. If Satsuma Maharshi said it, then it's a fact. Of course, he was ahead of the curve because he was typing Prabhupada's dictation also. Prabhupada used to send tapes to Boston. And, of course, even before then, he was copying out Prabhupada's lectures just by hearing and writing. But then, when Prabhupada began dictating his books, and Satsuru, he would send the tapes to Boston, and Satsuru Maharaj would transcribe them until I started moving in on his territory. Competing.
Excuse me, Maharaj, what books did you have then?
Well, what we had was Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Easy Journey to Other Planets, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya was in proofs, and Bhagavad Gita was maybe in manuscript or kind of on its way to...
That original bridge, short version of Gita was not yet?
Even Teachings of Lord Chaitanya hadn't been published when I first joined. It was basically Easy Journey and Srimad Bhagavatam on chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, Who is Crazy? And one more.
The topmost system.
Not yet. There was another little pamphlet. Not yet. That was first published in Back to Godhead a little bit later.
Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure.
Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure was the other booklet, yeah.
And the Bhagavatam was divided in...
It was Prabhupada's, the red ones, the India First Canto. Second Canto didn't start till quite a bit later. After Glenville Avenue, they got a place in Alston, which is another Boston suburb. And it was a big house, a former funeral parlor.
Haunted like anything. Super haunted.
Not as haunted as Brooklyn.
Valencia Street, San Francisco.
Excuse me? Anyway, well, all of our temples were haunted back then.
Cheap rent.
Nobody would buy them but us.
Yeah. Plus, we brought some pretty good bodies to inhabit, to haunt, too. No, anyway, we won't tell ghost stories tonight. But it was a big place, and so they established the press there. Prabhupada had wanted to start, he was keen to start his own press, and some boys were learning printing. And so then when they got that place, the former loading dock, where they used to bring the stiffs in, became the press floor, and we had two presses there, maybe one initially, then a second one, and we began printing Prabhupada's books. So Nectar of Devotion was printed there first time, and Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, in chapters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In chapters. There was Prabhupada's idea that you do a chapter, and then at the end you put the chapters together and you have a book. Otherwise, he'd wait for 3 years for us to come out with a book. This way, stepwise, he could whip us, and things got going. Now, that was an answer to a question that's...
What books?
Which book?
No, but that was also an answer to an earlier question. Okay. Oh, so, which books did we have? That's right. So then the dictation was going on. That would have been third canto, and Prabhupada interrupted third canto, if I'm not wrong, to do Krishna book. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya was already written and in the process of being published. Bhagavad Gita was already written, and that was the next book in process. But then Prabhupada was dictating third canto, then Krishna book. The little books were produced separately by Hayagriva Prabhu from lectures, Topmost Yoga, and that whole series of little books all came out in fairly quick succession. He did all of them. Krishna book.
There was a chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think, that came out in one solid hardback book.
No.
Not
hardback, paperback.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a little later. Prabhupada began Chaitanya Charitamrita. First we published fourth canto, third canto, fourth canto, second canto, third canto, fourth canto, Nectar of Devotion, Ishopanishad. And Satsrut Maharaj was involved in editing a lot of those books. The third canto, he did a lot of the editing, then I went behind him. Fourth canto, maybe, is where he left off. Krishna book, he was the first editor for that, and Hayagriva went behind him. Krishna book. And Nectar of Devotion was Ray Rama. I don't think Satsrut Maharaj was very much involved in Nectar of Devotion as an editor. But he was one of the editors. The editors were Hayagriva, Ray Rama, and Satsrut Maharaj. Those were really the three editors back then. Satsrut Maharaj would get the transcriptions, and so he would begin editing them, and then Hayagriva would go behind him and finish the job. And same on Krishna book. Although later I got involved. Yeah, he wouldn't sleep much either. He wasn't eating much, and he would sleep a lot less than the rest of us. He was very serious about it. And took Krishna consciousness very seriously. It wasn't just a joyride. It was the real business of life, and serving Prabhupada was his real business. And he'd had so much association with Prabhupada, and he tells about that in some of his books. Prabhupada said, that it's not mechanical. If you love me, then I love you. So many personal experiences he had back then, and then later on also. My impression was that he was a terrible manager. he wasn't gifted, like Brahmananda was a good manager. Back in those days, Brahmananda was quite good. And Satsrut Maharaj was not as capable, like Brahmananda would be. Seeing Satsrut Maharaj's management is not really the standard. But Prabhupada selected him for the GBC. later he said that among all the GBC men, you stand first because you always send the report. Prabhupada wanted a monthly report from all of his GBC men. So he had all these big managers, but he couldn't get a report out of them. What's actually going on? Anybody's guess. So Satsrut Maharaj may not have been as, slick a manager as... that wasn't his nature. He was more literary and more inclined toward personal practice and preaching. But management was not, it wasn't what he was cut out to do. In the material world, he wouldn't have been, a bank manager or something, or any kind of manager. He would have been doing something else. But Prabhupada selected him for the governing body, and he was dutiful. He may not have been slick or powerful or sharp as a manager, but he was dutiful. And that mattered to Prabhupada more. That meant that you could depend on him to take your instructions seriously and do your best to carry them out. And he would do that. And so, you know, you always send the reports. If given an assignment, he would always take it seriously and try to carry that assignment out. And we saw sometimes that in the long run, that would be more effective. You had so many good managers who would come and go because they, you know, they had other interests, or they, you know, they're flaky, or what's the word? Fickle, you know, wanted to do this, and then they wanted to do that, and then whatever. But Satsrut Maharaj was dutiful, so whatever Prabhupada gave him to do, he would take that as his duty and faithfully carry that out, so that over time things got done. Boston Temple became one of the leading temples in the movement. Later, of course, the library party was a duty that he took on. And well, there again, he wasn't like the most gifted Sankirtan man. There were that wouldn't have been his forte. There were so many devotees who would go out and distribute huge numbers of books. And Satsrut Maharaj would go out and distribute some books. I remember Chaitanya one time, you saw Vyas Puja offering to Satsrut Maharaj that, by your mercy, we're able to distribute so many books. And Chaitanya said, by his mercy, he hardly distributes any books. He can't distribute it. But he took the mission seriously. And that library party was so pleasing to Prabhupada, and he gathered a batch, Mahabodhi, Ghanashyam, who later became Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Isha, Kalakanta, Bhugarbha, I think.
Gokulananda.
Mahakram. I forget.
Gokulananda.
And built a party that was super. They used to go, they went, you know, just combed America selling books.
They came to Amsterdam, right? They came to Europe.
Oh, that's right. After America, they came to Europe and continued. So that was, and Prabhupada used to take such great pleasure in the reviews and the sales. And
came to Hawaii, too.
Hawaii also. Yeah, that's even part of America. By some calculations.
Yeah.
The governing body work also he took very seriously. Although, again, this is not his, the sort of the what he's cut out for. But because Prabhupada wanted it done, and because it had to be done, so he took it very seriously, his own responsibilities in Dallas and various, later it was the East Coast, Bidanagari.
Hawaii
also was part of his territory for some time. Yeah. So always serving. So that's dedication. I mentioned austerity, and then fidelity, and dedication. Those were the three things I mentioned.
You say faithful?
That's fidelity.
Yeah.
And dedication. Those things were, and sannyas, that was natural for him. That was natural for him, because he wasn't a person for enjoying. Even as a sannyasi, we had quite a number of enjoying sannyasis back then. You got a lot of perks, but he was very serious as a sannyasi and very dutiful, traveling, always traveling. Latin America also, I think, became
Trinidad.
Part of Trinidad, right.
Well, the Caribbean.
The Caribbean.
The Caribbean
and Guyana.
That's right, Guyana and Trinidad and
Suriname
and a few other interesting places that were part of his zone. So he went down there.
Didn't he have the Gurukul for a while?
He had the Gurukul for some time in Dallas.
Dallas.
A lot of responsibilities that that he had. And he always took it seriously. He always set the example of how to be serious about devotional service, about Bhagavatam, about getting up in the morning, you know, which was a big thing. Getting up in the morning, chanting your rounds with great seriousness and attention. Sadhana. Sadhana was not... was sometimes something taken for granted or treated lightly. But Satsrut Maharaj took sadhana very, very seriously. All of these items, getting up in the morning, chanting Hare Krishna with attention, hearing the Bhagavatam very seriously, writing, of course, which was a big, his main service really now, but was always an important service for him, and Prabhupada encouraged him, and Prabhupada liked his writing. So writing your realizations, Prabhupada said, that way it becomes strong. So reading, writing, preaching, and living the life of a serious devotee, a person who's intent on carrying out the orders of the spiritual master, intent on serving Krishna, which is the ultimate value. I may not be the greatest manager, I may not be the greatest singer, I may not be the greatest pujari, I may not be the greatest whatever, but if I'm serious, if I'm dedicated to the orders of the spiritual master, if I follow, well, that, as Prabhupada said, simple thing, just follow. So Satsrut Maharaj has done that. He's followed Srila Prabhupada. He's stuck with Srila Prabhupada. He showed that dedication, that fidelity, seriousness. And therefore we're so much indebted to him. So many things he's given, Prabhupada Lilamrita, other books where there's so much of a contribution, this Japa Reform Notebook and many other books that are treasures for us and for future generations. We owe to Satsrut Maharaj. But now I think I've talked enough. I get the sense that I should let others speak. Sureshwar Prabhu.
I cry a lot at movies. So I don't know if I can speak. I used to cry. Hare Krishna.
It's okay to cry.
Well, if I cry, then you just have to make me laugh. That's what I tell everybody. I tell them, and then laughter breaks the tears. So. Satsvarupa vidam vande.
Make a joke.
Make me laugh, O Lord. Make me laugh as you like. Vinitam sadhubhushanam bhakti granthana naipanyam bhakti vedanta shikshitam. So I was in Dallas in 1978, just after Srila Prabhupada left. And Satsrut Maharaj had just returned from India, had already initiated a couple of Bengalis and one French Canadian. And he was in Dallas gathering his team. He just received the commission to write the Lilamrita. So he called me in LA and he said, come on, join the team. So I joined him in Dallas. And then he was getting ready to initiate his first batch of Western disciples. So I approached him. I said, Maharaj, you need a mantra. This is before the Magnificent Eleven had all the problems. You know. So, you know how it was, remember? We were just trying to carry on as best we could. You need a mantra, Maharaj. Come on, you're going to initiate people. You need a mantra. And he said, well, I don't need a mantra. What do you mean I need a mantra? I said, well, I'm going to get you a mantra. So I wrote Kusha Karada in L.A. He said, hey, Kush, we need a mantra for Satsrupa Maharaj. So look, he's humble. He's a saintly person. He writes books, and he follows Srila Prabhupada. Really nice. So can you make a mantra out of those elements?
Sure, I can make a mantra.
So he sent the mantra, and it arrived in time for the initiation. And he used it. He used the mantra for the initiation. But then after the initiation, he called me into his office and he said, Sureshwara, I sent this mantra to Rupanuga. And Rupanuga Prabhu said that this mantra is useless because it did not come from your disciples. So I said, well, can I say the mantra? I need something more than mantra kalpa rubius, yeah. I might say the mantra. All right, you can say the mantra, but don't tell anybody. That's just sort of jumping in the middle of the movie because, you know, continuing the funeral parlor story, that's where I joined. I joined in the funeral parlor. It was the most intense.
You were one of the live ones.
I was one of the live ones. Well, that was questionable. I was severely haunted. But I did join because I never saw anyone that looked like a light bulb, and this was Jayadeva Brahmachari.
The real reason he joined is because someone stole his shoes and it was snowing and he couldn't move,
that was,
right?
That was Petit Lutheran.
Petit Lutheran stole your shoes?
Well,
he had that problem.
Oh,
and my watch. Hey, Prabhu, can I have your watch? Anyway, so, I was inspired by the Bhagavad Gita, as butchered as it was, you know, the purple Gita with a black Vishnu silhouette with Denise Levertov and Allen Ginsberg and Thomas Merton thrown in to spice the pot. But I stayed because it's Satsrupa Maharaj, because I never met anybody like him. And you know, he reminded, I don't know why, when I joined this movement, I thought that everybody was a famous person. That was my take on this movement, that everybody was a famous person from history. And they were all coming. And this was a caste party for history. And all the famous people were taking birth in this movement. And Satsrupa Maharaj, for some reason, was President Kennedy. He reminded me of President Kennedy. So anyway, so after about a month in this, yes, I was coming off some. So it was the most intense temple. I don't know how Satsrupa Maharaj was the president. Das Adhikari was the president. Radharani was the first lady. But it all worked. I think it all worked because of his example. I think because he was the most austere, sincere, dedicated person. Everybody loved him. So it kind of worked. You know, love ruled. And even though he was not, you know, by any stretch, a manager at all. So it was so intense. After, this appears to be a digression, but it ends up at Satsrupa Maharaj's feet, and I've told this to my friends, but I'll tell you. So after a month in this temple, which is the most intense temple in the movement at the time, it was before LA had taken off, all the press was there, all the artists, the senior devotees, Hridayananda Brahmachari, Giriraj Brahmachari was the temple commander, was the Sankirtan leader, Hridayananda was the temple commander, you know, Bharaj Raj, Rulidhar, Jadarani, the artists, and a few other people. And
Space Kind.
And, you know, it was just 50 people running up and down this three flights of stairs. It was a madhouse, you know. But it all worked because we all left the madhouse. We were on Sankirtan all day. Anyway, after a month of this, it was so intense. I just couldn't take it, even though I was so attracted Yeah, it was like the old chutney, too hot to bear, too sweet to resist. So in the middle of the summer, I joined in July. Big sacrifice, I joined the week of the All-Star game, right? So a month later, there I was, you know, I was trying to get, you know, I loved chanting, I loved the Bhagavad Gita, I couldn't handle, you know, getting up so early and going to bed so late, and what's going on here, you know? So I put my bedroll out on the porch, and I, in the middle of the night, you know, and I just went down to this nunnery park. There was a nunnery down the street, and they had a nice park, you know? And then my plan was to hitchhike away the next morning to Cape Cod, you know, from Boston. So luckily, there were shuffling feet at my head, and it was Ridhananda Brahmachari. Dip for Boo, you coming to Mangal Arti? No, this is too much for me. I'm going to hitchhike to Cape Cod. I'm sorry, I can't do this. So anyway, Ridhananda, he proceeded to just find whatever little intelligence was there, and he just dragged me back to the temple, and very wisely sat me down on the porch with Satsvarup Das Adhika. And he became my friend. I just needed a friend. That's all I needed. Somebody who would be my big brother, my mentor, or something. You know. So we were sitting up. There was a swing, porch swing. There was a swing on the porch. And I didn't know that his family had abandoned him. He gave up everything. So I said, did you ever have any doubts? Any doubts? Did you ever have any doubts? He said, doubts? Yes, I had many doubts. Many bitter doubts. But Prabhupada took his cane, he kicked out all those doubts. I said, oh. I'm going to give you to Bharadraj. You know Bharadraj. You know Bharadraj. Some of you know her. This pixie-like angel person who talks like this. He's so intense. Very intense. And he became my big brother. And he just walked me around the block every day, you know. So, but it was Satsarup's example that held that temple together. It was a crazy house. You know, people like Sachi Suda, you know. these people were, I mean, were just...
He was quite sane. Connie?
Connie, the artist?
Space Connie, they called
Space
him.
Space Connie, yeah. Not me.
No, Space Connie, you know, she never came down.
No, she never came down. She was staying high forever.
Before she joined.
Anyway, I got so many sets. I shared them on the day, a few, with Pramila and Shamalasaki and Sudhir Devani. Right.
Is you? Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. And, but it's just, I can't tell you how many times I read his books, you know, when I read his books. And it's just, I love this guy. It's just so right on. It's just the mot juste. It's just the perfect word, the perfect mood. It's the perfect honesty. Some people say he's honest to a fault. I don't agree. He's honest. We can never be too honest. I don't care who you're talking to, your disciples, your friends. He's not honest to a fault. He's just honest. And that's why he was able to, you know, come back from where he was, you know, about 10 years ago. Because he's honest. Yeah. I'll just talk a little bit about that. He was so dedicated and austere. And what was the other?
Faithful.
He had to do what he did, he actually had to submerge most of his personality, you know, for many, many, many years. And that, you know, and in the pre-Varnashram ISKCON, that's what we did, you know, the Hare Krishna explosion. You know, and even, you know, someone like Satsuk Maharaj was, you know, just doing the book dance. I told the story of Chicago, State Street, 1972. The only line that would cut through the din of the riveting and the madness, the cacophony of State Street, you know, the police look like wild boars. Complete animals. The only line that would work was, I took an incense stick. We were all doing this incense dance with BTGs. Hey, stop or I'm going to kill you. And then they look up, huh? That's what would stop them. That's the only thing that would stop people. Stop or I'm going to kill you. And then they'd say, what did you say? Anyway, can you imagine Satsuk Maharaj doing this dance with incense, you know, in BTGs to try to stop people? So at one point, I told the devotees, I looked over and he fell. He just fainted against the building. It was like a fighter on the ropes, you know. And I went over to him, I helped him up, and I said, Maharaj, you all right? And he said, I think I have to go to the van for a little bit and rest. I go to the van later. What's he doing? He's typing an article for BTG. What he should have been doing anyway. But in the Hare Krishna explosion, we didn't do that. Anyway, I got so many stories, I don't want to hog the whole thing, but I'll just tell you one thing. I realized when I started reading his japa, well, when he had this Yellow Submarine Bhajan Kutir online, started a couple of years ago, and it would always start with a japa kind of free form, japa report. You know, he would wake up and he'd write japa essays. And these japa essays were nourishing me so much. This is just a couple of years ago. And his writing was so on, I said, wow, he's really healed. He's really come all the way back. This is better than that. This is bad. This is great stuff. And I started applying what he was saying. And it transformed my japa. It actually transformed my japa. So I was writing him this. And then I visited him in Delaware in 09. And I said, you know, this stuff is great, what you're writing. You've got to make a book out of this. So he talked to this, you know, his men, his team. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So next spring, I was in Hawaii, and next spring I got a letter from one of his disciples, Chaitanya Chandandoy. And he said, Satru Maharaj has taken your suggestion seriously, and we've compiled the best of his japa essays, and he wants you to write a review. So here's the rough manuscript, electronic manuscript. So I skimmed it. You know, because I'd read most of it anyway online. And then it was great. So I just wrote something. And then he wrote me back. He said, this isn't a review. This is the introduction of the book. Can it be the introduction? I said, sure. We got Krishna Kshetra write the forward. You can write, this is the introduction. So anyway. So the book came out. Maharaj mentioned Japa Reform, which is a great book. There's also Japa Walks, Japa Talks. Like, there's another one too. This is all leading to an offer. I have a whole case of these books. I've given away one case. And if you want a copy of this book, I have a whole case in Hawaii. You just give me your email. And when I get back to Hawaii at the end of April, I'll be happy to mail you, wherever you are in the world, a copy of this. And I gave the title, so he called it something else, and I said, no, it's Japa Transformations. I said, hey, okay, I like that. So, because it transformed me. So it's better than ever. He is better than ever, if you can believe. It's like sometimes when a bone heals, it gets a bit stronger than it was. That's how it is. His writing is better than ever. And he's better than ever. But that's a good, that's just not an idle offer. That's a good offer. I vow to send you a copy of this book. If you want to experience something to help your japa, you read this very intense stuff. And it takes you, you know, from the outer name, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Namakara Bhaghihoi, Namanahihoi. Merely mouthing the external syllables of the holy name does not mean the one is actually chanting the holy name. So you start with that, but then you go really deep. And even when he takes you to the club,
and you hear the wail of the sax in the jazz club, because he's a jazz buff. He hears Krishna in jazz. Anywhere takes you to the ballpark, and you see Krishna in the flight of the ball. He sees Krishna there. And then he takes you back. That's externally. And then he takes you back internal to Prabhupada's ultimate remedy for one vagrant minds just here. Hare Krishna. So I just wrote him a letter after we had this little get together, and I said, we just had a sweet little gathering just to honor your birthday, and I consider, you know, knowing you as a friend one of the biggest blessings of my life. But this might even be better, I think, what's going on tonight. I don't know. So, my friend Satya Maharaj, our friend Satya Maharaj Ki.
Hey.
This is my address.
Yeah,
you got mine already.
Are you
welcome? Yes. I did. Did I write you? Before?
I gave you the address, but
you better do.
Why
don't we just
maybe
have a piece of paper?
Yeah,
everybody can write there
if you want.
Do we have paper?
A big piece of paper.
Big piece of paper.
So you have an
yeah,
and the
we already have
here.
It
doesn't
matter.
You can write on the other side.
Well, you have to write there in the test.
Pass the
yeah.
book around.
Yes. Pass it around.
It's better than me.
Will I have to write it again?
No.
That's
it. That's it. That's it.
Who else wants to say something?
I was in Hawaii. It was in 1978. Srila Prabhupada had disappeared. And Satsuk Maharaj, after the GBC meeting, was given the dreadful task of being the GBC of Hawaii. Hawaii has a very, very colorful history. It's kind of considered to be like the
Bermuda Triangle, the Hare Krishna movement.
Yeah, like that. You go there and then you disappear.
Inexplicably.
Yeah. It's like people would go from like maybe Boston and then to LA and then maybe to San Diego and then to Laguna Beach and then they go to Hawaii and then never be seen again.
Another tradition that continues.
So I joined there. And I lived there for 14 years. But as far as Satsu Maharaj goes, he came there and was the beginning of the, you know, he initiated devotees. Some of them had been there. Hopefully they were openly initiated by Prabhupada, but when Prabhupada left the planet and he initiated them, and some of them are actually still doing quite well. You know, he attracted some very, you know, nice devotees, you know, nice sincere people. But as far as his character goes, he was quite awkward on the Vyasa side. It's not that he's the kind of person that aspired to be like in that situation that he was in. Actually, he dreaded it. And you could see he was very awkward and it wasn't like natural for him. He was just kind of like pushed into it. And he was so sincere though that, you know, we just backed him as you know, when we were his younger godbrothers. We were fully into him
and we liked him. We encouraged devotees to get initiated by him. And to this day, I'm not ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. Even though the system was a little, you know, different, not exactly the way things go in our, you know, our broth. It got straightened out later, and he was so remorseful about what went on. When in those years, he suffered greatly because of that. He's a very heartfelt person, and takes very seriously his actions, his deeds, and his service to Srila Prabhupada. And is very conscientious. And as stated in the, there's some pastimes like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, like Maharaj Pariksit garlanded the sage, and, you know, it was Krishna's arrangement that he was put in that stream of consciousness. And then after doing it, he was like, wow, what did I do? And it's described in the purport that due to this repentance, the whatever wrong he did was burned up by this fire of repentance. So Satsrut Maharaj was kind of like pushed into this Zonal Acharya business, and pushed into this, pushed into that. There were some very, very powerful people that surrounded him and kind of forced him to do things that were just totally against his nature. And he showed really the core of his heart. Felt so bad about it that he never really recovered physically from what went on in the 80s.
That's when the headache started.
Yeah, when the headache started. And anyway, it just goes to show his how much heart he has and how much feeling he has for the devotees, and how responsible he felt. And it hurt him so much. And but those of us that are kind of like on the, that weren't leaders, and no one took any, I can't think of anyone that really holds him responsible. He was just pushed. But he felt responsible. He was so sincere. Anyway, sometimes we learn. We go through the school of hard knocks, and we've been through the school of hard knocks in the Christian movement. As I've said previously, we didn't have any parental guidance. We were a bunch of young people, and, you know, just kind of like figuring things out as we went along. And I have faith that Krishna like has some, he's watching over us and giving us, helping us make mistakes and learn from them, and it's like arrangements are being made so that, you know, we become wise and we become mature and we get some really some solid understanding of Krishna consciousness. And and things can improve based on things that went wrong. And Satsri Maharaj was one of those kinds of persons, or is one of those kinds of persons, that he was never like a lot of us. He was always a sane, sober, conscientious, heartfelt, sincere person. And any difficulties he's had, he's become a better person because of it. And anyone who criticizes can be wrong. It would feel really sorry for them.
There's that other book, Guru Reform Notebook. That was so subversive. It was written, you know, while the everything was still in place. His colleagues really didn't like that book. It was great. Hmm? His colleagues, yeah. It was written really to undermine things, and it was very powerful.
He didn't like his high profile stuff.
Only one. Like Maharaj was saying, those who joined in 1966, they were basically icons for us. And I came in touch with the movement in October of 69. And that was when Hansa Duda was preaching in Berkeley. So he'd probably been a devotee maybe 3 years. So just try to see things relatively. Somebody 3 years was the senior. And he was probably 30 years old, I think. And so I was 19. So somebody 30 is like really old. And I think Satsang
Maharaj was 1969. So he was...
He's 29.
So this idea of the icon, the senior people, and I think, you know, there were a few that held a special place, but I first had some association, not much, with him in 1972, so that means basically he was one of the icons, and for me, and very senior. And in 1972, there were a few sannyasis, but the general profile of sannyasis in 1972 is most of them were in their early or mid-20s. And sannyas at that time had a lot of prestige, at least relatively speaking. In the movement at that point, no brahmachari had their own room. We all lived together, right? You know, 20 in one room. One speak of a servant, that was like off the charts to have a servant. So sannyasis, they traveled temple to temple, they'd get their own room. It's like a big thing. And they'd have a servant. Which is like, wow, he's got a servant. And generally it was like, I remember when Madhavisa took sannyas and they made the announcement, I was in San Francisco, and they said, everyone should be very reverential. There's a sannyasi in our midst. Everyone was like, whoa. It was like a really big thing. Just trying to draw the picture so you understand the story. And we really didn't know how to treat them, so every maha plate it came to the sannyasi. Six offerings a day would just come to them.
The good old days.
So, you know, you're sitting there in your griha and your wife saying, and you're thinking, six offerings, your own servant, you know, your own room, better all the time. So it went to the head of a lot of sannyasis. So what I'm trying to say is, without being offensive, the ones who took sannyas were not the most humble of devotees in our movement, and they really flew with it and took advantage of it, and most of them fell on their face because of it. So that was kind of the, you know, you took sannyas, you're like, you know, everyone, every time you saw a sannyasi, you'd pay obeisances. So every time they'd come out of the temple, everyone would pay obeisances. Every time they'd walk down the street, everyone. So, you know, obviously I went to the head of a few of them. They started to think, well, yeah, I must be hot stuff or something. You know? Anyway, so Satsri Maharaj was traveling, I believe, with Ridhainana Maharaj and Sureshwar and Kushikrata and whoever
Nakush.
Else.
Well, no, not Kush.
No, Kush came to San Diego.
He was in San Diego.
Oh, he was already there.
That's where
there.
They dropped me off.
Oh, anyway, they dropped him off for, I don't know why.
I had had it.
But anyway, Satsri Maharaj came. And I had never really seen him before, you know. So I remember walking up the stairs in the San Diego temple, and he was there. And as soon as he saw me, he paid obeisances to me. And I was just like, I was like, oh my God. I didn't even pay obeisances. He paid them to me. He's the icon of ISKCON. He's the sannyasi, and I hadn't met a humble sannyasi yet. And there he is paying obeisances, and I was like, This is like, he's in the wrong movement or something. So that was really the only real association I had, but, you know, that was, you know, 1972, so, you know, and the picture is very clear in my mind because it impacted me. It was like, this was not normal. This is not a normal person doesn't do this. You know, this is like, you know, as soon as you see, you know, your God brother, your sannyasi, you're down on the floor. And I vaguely remember something else, but unfortunately it's not clear in my mind, something where there was a discussion and questioning, and I vaguely remember something, he questioning me and asking me, well, do you think this is right? You know, something like that, where there's like absolutely no pretension, no false ego, nothing, just like Sureshwar said, total honesty, just totally free to be honest, to be totally vulnerable. And in those days in ISKCON, vulnerability was that you'd push that way out of the way. You know, that was like it wasn't there. So these things impressed me. So you don't understand the environment that was happening in. That was just very unusual.
Why don't we hear from that?
I only met Maharaj, I think, a couple of times in Gitanagari. When I got there in 1986. But that was the time that he actually moved out of Gitanagari. And he left, and then, you know, I think he came back once and briefly for a couple of days. So the only thing that I remember really about that time was that he had that cabin by the river, right? And then I came to visit in 1984 from Costa Rica. And so one devotee from Costa Rica, Paramahansa was there.
And Uma.
In Uma, yes. Yeah. So he brought me to Maharaj, and so Maharaj was very casual, you know, even that was the first time we met. And I told him that I was planning, that was my second visit to Gitanagari, that I was planning to move to Gitanagari. And then this devotee, Paramahansa, he was very active, very energetic, working always, you know, for five persons at least. And so I remember he says, well, if all the Costa Ricans are like Paramahansa, you're welcome. But practically speaking, you know, like I said, I got there, when I finally got there in 86, he was there for just a week or something, and then he left. And then he left, and next time I saw him was in Miami, that I moved to Alachua, and then he came for a JC meeting in Miami Beach. Mm-hmm. So really, I didn't have much association with Maharaj, just short moments, really.
What about some of the ladies?
Sure.
disciple side. You know, the other, there's the brother.
The other side is here.
Or whatever.
I met Sasu Maharaj in Guyana in early 80s, and I remember my parents won't let me move into the temple because the girl child have to get married, and not an Indian girl child. So I try being a devotee at home. I was a devotee at home. Then my dad did something. I had special pots, so my dad cooked eggs in one of my pots. I was very upset. And Sansu Maharaj happened to be in the temple, and the temple president brought me in from Sansu Maharaj and said, tell me your problems. He said, your father is like Hiranyakashipu. He said, and you're like like Prahlad Maharaj, so you should pray to Nisringadeva. And I remember praying sincerely to Nisringadeva, and he got me out of that situation. But I never got initiated by him because Agrani Swami Guru, Sasu Maharaj wasn't taking on more disciples at that time, so Agrani Swami, that's why I got initiated. But I had quite a lot of association with Sasu Maharaj because my ex-husband was a disciple of Sasu Maharaj. But one time in 87, I was working at the airport in New York, Kennedy Airport for Pan Am, and Sasu Maharaj was coming to the Gita Nagar Theater that year. He was coming from Ireland, so he came out of the plane door open, I'm standing right there at the gateway to receive him, with my, you know, suit on and everything. So he says, what are you doing? I came to receive you. So I got him through the whole customs immigration. His danda was stuck upstairs, I went and got it. And so he said, why am I not staying with you? Well, first he asked where we're living. I said, oh, we live 10 minutes away from the airport. He said, how come I'm not staying with you? They're paying $100 a night for me to stay in a hotel. He said, Maharaj, we have a small basement apartment. He says, okay, when I come back from Gita Nagari, I can stay with you and write for a little. So he went to the Rathyatra, and he came back. We didn't even have a bed. We were sleeping on old Vyasa-san cushion from Lake Huntington. So I forgot the body name, Bhattanaya's husband, a big guy from
Ganeshap.
Yeah, he brought a futon mattress with our from Kidanagari. So I moved out and went into the Brooklyn Temple. So he stayed in that basement apartment for 2 weeks. And every day I would come on the train and cook for him. Then he would take us out. My ex-husband would drive him in Brooklyn, Atlantic Avenue. He would show us all the places that he would go as a child, where he lived in that house. And he used to go to this park and when they were little and have cardboard boxes using the sled. Yeah.
What was your impression of him in this character?
First time I saw him, I thought he was a devata from the heavens. I just remember I'd never seen any, because I grew up as a Hindu. I would go to all the pujas and Janmashtami and Shivratri, but the first two Western devotees I saw was Adi Keshava Maharaj and Pranadas, and that was far out for me. And then Sachu Maharaj came after me. Especially in Guyana, because we were out there, that was really remote. Didn't have much association.
What about Jen?
Disciples, and I was staying with one of
played the man in County Wicklow, Southern Ireland, for 1 month, and he was at the Rathiatra on the stage. I remember really, you know, he had a big effect on me, you know, listening to him and singing. And then they had a festival, they were installing a Prabhupada Murti in Dublin, in this center, preaching center, and he came in, and I was just sitting there with one of his disciples. We both had very young children, you know, by our knees, and that's pretty much walked in. He walked in the door, like there, and I was sitting here. And he just looked straight at me, and he went right in my heart, and time just stood still for, I don't know, it was just like, seemed like a long time, but I felt like he marked me then, and then he just walked on to the asana and sat down, and the fire yogi on his mat. And so I started writing to him, and for about 6 months, this was a few letters. And then it was Prabhupada's disappearance day in November, and I wrote a very serious letter to him. And then he wrote back, and I realized it was, you know, this is an important relationship now. So then next thing I moved to Ireland. I moved from England to Ireland. He was very surprised. So then we carried on corresponding. I got to do a lot of service because he was in Ireland a lot around that time. So I was cooking for him regularly. And he had this little van. Him and his servant were traveling around Europe. I remember I got this service to clean the van and to sand down all the wood in the van and varnish it. And anyway, I was cleaning, I would clean the floor and sweep all the dust, and you know, I had to take the dust of below his feet of the pure devotee and put it on. So I'd run back to my friend, my ghost, and I'd throw it on the floor. That would be an ecstasy, you know. So obviously, it went on for 7 years, you know, cooking. We used to give lectures on the Sunday, you know, this afternoon. And then we went out and carried on writing to him. He's been like such a big support. You know. And his relationship with the disciples, it's so so personal and so caring, you know, with each of his disciples. You know, and he has so many disciples, but he takes such concern for his disciples, even the ones that have left. You know, he says, "I'm always here for you. And, you know, please don't leave this school." So, like that, he was kind of like fatherly figure. Yeah, I appreciate him. And it was only because that's how much I was able to really practice Christian consciousness seriously. 1 year after I met him. Because of the mercy I got from him.
Tell about your name.
Sean Lai, he gave me the name, but it was just before Radhastami, 1993. And I had to wait some time for, it was a funny thing with the initiation. I was waiting for a few years, and then he wasn't going to initiate anymore. I was devastated. I was like, I'll just throw myself in the lake. I went in the room for the yogi, and I had this machine gun, and I was wailing. And all the devotees came running and said, "What's wrong?" So they were trying to explain what was going on. The Satchi Mahārāja did not initiate anymore. I've been waiting like 3 or 4 years. And there was a whole series of events. So eventually he said he would do some initiation, certain people. He said, "Okay." I said, "I read in the Nectar of Devotion, Maharaj, that if you don't take initiation from the spiritual master, the process of Krishna consciousness doesn't fully take off, you know." And then when I wrote that, he said, "Okay, you know, right, you know, no, you'd be reading Prabhupada's books, and but don't tell anybody, because there'd be other people chasing me, there'd be other people that he didn't want to like, keep it quiet." He said, "When the right time comes, we can do it." And, you know. So I waited about another 9 months, and he came. He did do it in the summer, and he came and then he went, and it still didn't happen. And I was like, no, he's never going to initiate. You know, there was always some obstacle. So I just said, "Okay, I'll just leave this to Krishna." And then when I did that, one of the god brother came, he said, "You're going for a trip on Wednesday. Shh, don't tell anyone." And then I realized, okay, so the temple president of Shed. It was just me and Satsri Maharaj and his servant and the temple president. So it was just, very personal. They gave me the name Shyamalai because it was like Krishnamai is the name for my brother, so changed it to Shyamalai.
And he gave you the name Krishnamai first,
no,
right?
No, Shyamalai. Because it was, it's Radharani in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says Krishnamai.
Okay.
It's the name for Radharani. And they explained it.
Can you speak
a little? I had the good fortune to hear one Srimad Bhagavatam class from him. That's really nice, but I can't remember exactly which year. I think it was 1995. And I was so amazed. I saw actually Srimad Prabhupada sitting there, and now I can understand why I felt like this, and I hear how sincere and all these good qualities so that he represented. And another thing, about 10 years ago, I bought a book from him, is it Vaishnava Compassion?
Mm-hmm.
And I read this, I was in Alachua doing book distribution. And so I went out and I met a family. They had a slaughterhouse, or it means they killed cows. And I can't remember who I approached first, the father or the son. One said no, but then the father or the son, I remembered the book, the compassion. I got so deep compassion. It I was just reading and he took a book. And then for me, I told to Satsvarup Swami, you distributed the book. Thank you. It was definitely through reading this book that I had.
Srila Satsarupa Maharaj kind of creeped up on me in a way that I wasn't quite expecting. I started reading his books in the late 1990s, and I was devouring them, actually. And after reading them for a period of time, for some reason, and I don't know where it came from, I thought, I want to take initiation from this great personality, because I was receiving so much from his books. And I'd already had two gurus before that. So I was aware that I didn't need to take initiation again for the third time. The first time, when my first guru left, I remember our ISKCON authorities were pressing us to take re-initiation. They were encouraging us. They were almost like telling us that we had to take re-initiation. So, which I did. And then the second guru left. So, I was quite surprised with where this came from, where this was something that was impelled in my heart. So I just decided to write to them, and I asked them for initiation. That was my first letter. Will you initiate me? I hadn't told anyone. I hadn't even told my husband or anyone in my community. And Guru Maharaj wrote back and said no, because he thought I was in New Zealand and he was at that time in Ireland. And one of the reasons was that was a geographical reason, because he thought that we would not see each other physically. And for some reason, I didn't accept. No, I was unsubmissive, obviously. And I kind of pursued the point. And so he assented. He said, well, let's just write, let's just communicate, and we'll see how things evolve. And it was two years of, no, I think a year of communication. And in that time, I continued to read his books. And I was aware, I was very, very aware that this relationship, this guru-disciple relationship, was going to be based on Vani, and which requires seriousness, of course, anyway. But I had to be prepared to understand that our association was going to be through his books and through our personal communication. And after seriously considering, both of us seriously considering that, then we went forward and accepted the sacred guru-disciple relationship. And for the reasons, actually, that you, Maharaj, I'm just, it's really very, very gratifying for me to be here, because this is the first time I've ever been amongst a group of devotees glorifying Guru Maharaj. I've always been alone in New Zealand. I was the only disciple. And I mean, it was okay, but it's when I hear the devotees in this room glorifying Guru Maharaj, it affirms all the reasons as to why I accepted him as my spiritual master. And he's never let me down, even though he had his difficulty, and it was difficult for me after what I'd already been through. By the mercy of Maharaj here and other devotees, I was able to come to the conclusion that he actually never let me down. And it assisted me so much in my relationship with him. It deepened my relationship with him. It deepened my relationship with Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. So I want to thank everybody in this room. And personally thank Maharaj for the help that he's given. So I'm going to finish with a little story. I was born with the name Ramila. My parents gave me the name Ramila. And when Bhavananda initiated me, he gave me the name Meena Devi. And then Jagadish initiated me, and he changed it to Madhumati. And then Satsarup Maharaj took me right back and gave me the name Ramila. And I rang my father, and my father and mother have always been great supporters of ISKCON, and they never, ever, ever criticised ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, the devotees. Through this, they saw me go through all of this, and they never ever once said to me, you know, don't you think that maybe? And I rang my father and I said, oh, you know, I've been initiated and my name is Ramila. And my father said, well, finally somebody got it right.
I'm not his disciple, but my husband Janmaskali does. He is his disciple. So I met Maharaj, Satsarup Maharaj, a few times only. And I always saw how, like my husband has, when he expresses something in a letter, it goes on very long. So sometimes he would write 10, 15 pages letter to Satsarup Maharaj, and I thought, my God, no. Satsarup Maharaj sometimes he might be very tired one day. But no, he was never complaining about this to my husband that can you make it shorter? Oh, this is too long, or this is too much money. No, he was always getting the essence out of his letters.
There's a trick to reading those kinds of letters.
Yeah, you know. But so he was always very patient with him and answered each and every letter, and sometimes two letters per week came back. There are certain times when my husband was maybe going through something in his service, so that Svok Maharaj would always take the time to write back immediately, no? Sometimes within a few days. So I remember there was a time when my husband was a temple president in Denver, and he had a very hard time, maybe for a year there. And so I think we have a whole folder full of letters, must be like 50, 60 letters. And he was always so positive and always bringing everything to balance. Like he would say, okay, you have to do this for your service, but you also have to do some recreation. You have to take time for your family. I always appreciated that so much in Maharaj, that as a sannyasi, he could understand where his disciples were at as grihasthas, or what they needed to hear. He would also sometimes chastise him, but he would always try to bring the light of his disciples in good balance, that they're healthy wherever they are at. And I was always, when I was reading his books, I was so much appreciating how every word practically in Prabhupada's books, he never took anything for granted or ordinary. Mm-hmm. He drew so much out of Prabhupada's work, of Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada's lectures, and would elaborate on it. And I thought, this is so amazing. I mean, everything has so much more meaning the way Svok Maharaj perceives it. So it's, instead of just one ordinary word, you could see so many different levels, so many different perspectives. So that was something it would always blew my mind when I opened his books. It was, wow, this is something I would never be able to express. It's in everyday's life, maybe things that happen or things we are seeing, but the way he perceives it, it was so deep and so full of meaning. So I could see that he could see Krishna's creation in everything. He would see somebody walking on the street and put it in connection with Krishna consciousness. So that was really very mind-blowing for me. And when I was serving in Germany between 1981 and 1990, before I got married, then there was a time, I think 1986, where the message got around that we were not allowed to read his books anymore because he was too open or too honest. So, and then there was especially something we weren't supposed to read. But some of the Prabhupada disciples, the ladies, they had some letter written from the GBCs. And
that was in Europe, yeah?
Yeah, was in Europe. And there was one quote, Svok Maharaj was saying something like, I'm not a pure devotee. I'm trying to serve. So that was something we weren't supposed to read. He's very pure devotee, being able to say this, you know? But nobody dared to even think like that. So I was reading the Forbidden Faith. It was difficult first, but I thought, wow, he must really fully with Krishna. He must be so close to Krishna that he can continue as a guru saying this And yeah. So I thought that was really, really revolutionary. And I saw how some took it in a positive way and some that just couldn't digest it at all at that time. But these were the things I appreciated so much about him, his writings, the depth, and his honesty.
We have a difference of Gundams. I had almost no association with Maharaj directly. Well, I should take that back, because before I joined, I was going to university in Boston, and I'm pretty sure I must have seen Maharaj there in the high number. We would go to concerts, free concerts, in Cambridge Common, and the devotees would come there and chant. So I'm almost sure I saw Maharaj there. But later, when I went to Europe, I joined Amsterdam, so I didn't have much of any association with the American devotees. Many years. But being here with all of you, I'm very grateful to Maji for arranging this, because I feel like being in Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, we can go on for hours talking about Maharaj. It's just always so palatable. I'm feeling like that. And I realized, I'm reminded now that Maharaj has been one of the most important mentors in my spiritual life from a distance. And for me, that's what Parampara means, that through his example and his words, especially his writings, I'm enlivened. I've always respected him hugely. And I don't know if there's anyone as prolific in their writing as Maharaj. I mean, has anyone ever counted how many books he's written? It's like breathing for him.
Yes.
He's taken this instruction applied according to his propensity. For me, he's a real individual in Krishna consciousness, and he's gotten himself in trouble, so to speak, apparently, because of that over the years. And he's been criticized and he's been rejected in certain ways, but I've never felt like, I think Charlie and Mahatma were saying, that there was any, and as Mother Arina was saying, I never felt let down that he was ever really not fully attached and devoted to Prabhupada and faithful, like you were saying, Maharaj. I think another word is chastity. It's the same thing. And I know that Maharaj has also been an example for me to try to be myself in Krishna consciousness, which is a struggle to be individual and to follow what I understand as Prabhupada. Prabhupada's realization in a society, do both those things, remain in the society, and yet follow my truth, so to speak. And Maharaj is, he's always been like that. And I think, for me, his honesty is it's been overwhelming for some devotees. Someone said, honest to a fault. It hasn't been like that for me. But for me, honesty, it's a huge strength. And I think it's a symptom of real humility. Because unless someone's really humble, they can't talk about what's really going on for themselves. Obviously, it has to be done carefully. And we don't want to make it materially sentimental. But Maharaj is able to convey with huge confidence and strength things which other devotees would or could never say. So I think that's more than normal. I think that's really normal. One other thing I got directly from Maharaj was the traveling Sankirtan Library Party, which he had organized and came to Amsterdam in 1973, I think, or 74. And we had Ghanisham, who became one of the sponsors. This vibrant, lively, enthusiastic, and
inspired group of devotees going out every day and distributing 7 Prabhupada books in the libraries and schools and professors. It was took the temple to a whole other level. And that was part of the Maharaj's creation. So. Thank you.
I mean, probably you never met Satsang Maharaj, but you're here, so you must be inspired by him somehow. It's showtime.
Maybe he would sing something.
Yeah. Always through the years, he was inspired a very humble, honest person. Yes, he always for us, he was an icon. No? He is, but he was at that time, when I'm saying, when I was very young, in Krishna consciousness. We always heard about Bhagavanda and Bhagavan and others. And but when we heard about Satsaru Maharaj, we heard about that Sadhu Bhushan, that sensitive, artistic, and good-hearted, humble person. And it's reflected in his book. I never had an interaction with him, so I can only give an impression. It's nice to be listening about his personality and the love there is for him. And this is all I have to say.
I think if you like I told at our gathering, I used to, when we were Kampala Lili Lamrita, he was the writer, and we had a team of people feeding him interviews and excerpts from this research and that. So when I was living in the cabin with him, I was living in a room right next to his. And then the servant would live in another room. And if I had a question for him, he's such a creature of the printed word that he would prefer that I not ask him the question. He'd prefer that I slip a piece of paper under the door so he could think about it. He didn't want to give me a flip answer. He wanted to think about it and write something back. So we would exchange letters, and we were living right next door, you know. So he really does put his heart in his writing, just as like Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, know my, you know, read my books. It's like that with him too. So you have met him, you have exchanged, if you've gotten impressions and
yes, especially Prabhupada's biography. That is Shastra. That is the way he conveyed Prabhupada's life. It is a reference for the next 10,000 years. So it says a lot about who he is.
We were amazed when he was writing that biography. We would tell, okay, I want you to, you got to feed me this for tomorrow. And we say to me and Shesh or Kundali or whoever was there, you know. We might want this interview, I want this, description of Boston or this description of Calcutta. So we feed him this stuff. And then in the evening, we gather, you know, in this room. And the whole community, Gidanagari was there. And then we'd hear what would come out of his pen, his typewriter, or his dictaphone. And it was like magic. It was like, wow. Did you hear that? It was empowered by
it was like the Lila Ritas were coming out one by one. It was like the Bhagavatam was coming out.
It was very empowered, right?
Yeah.
Very empowered. And it was very magical just to be there, to hear what would come out. It took 5 years. 78 to 83.
Of course, when Vidyananda Maharaj came to South America, he was trained by Satsarup Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
That says a lot.
Mm-hmm. And there, I traveled with both of them. When he was in charge of Dallas, we were traveling on the road distributing BTGs, and then Vidyananda Maharaj joined us.
Yes.
And they were like night and day.
Hmm. Satsumaj wrote something about it recently. Maybe I won't say it, even though he said it. But it was right on. It was just as I remembered it.
Do you remember what he said?
Well, I may not. I do remember what he said, but in essence, it was we would do programs, you know, be traveling in this van, and Hridayananda joined up for some time, and you know, some people would come, you know, five or seven people that we might have met locally, and Hridayananda would just take over. You know, he'd just start preaching about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and giving brilliant arguments and all of this, and just take over. And Satsumaj would just kind of like fade into the into the sidelines, and sort of let Hridayananda do it. But I think after some time, he'd be on and off. I think after some time, he would feel that it wasn't working. That perhaps they'd be better off traveling separately, and then sometimes they would still come together again. So it was a very interesting sort of it was exactly what you said. It was like night and day.
And they really liked each other. They were so different.
Tremendous friends. And mutual admirers.
Yeah, yeah.
But an impossible combination.
Yeah.
Yeah, opposites.
Would have been interesting to see how it would have worked out with, say, Hridayananda Maharaj and Tamal Krishnamurti.
Oh.
You hear a trumpet.
That's... We wouldn't even speculate about that. At least it worked with Satsurup.
We were traveling. We were traveling to college towns, and so we just back to Godhead's during the day, and we'd have contests to see who could come up with the most outrageous lines, you know, to get somebody to take a book. And then in the evening we'd have engagements in the college. So the program was, because of Vridhana Maharaj's, you know, vocal power, he would speak first, and he would ferret out all the Mayavadis and the impersonalists and the atheists. He would just blast them to bits, you know. And then whoever didn't leave, Satchamaraj kind of picked up the pieces and just placed them at Prabhupada's lotus feet.
He had something.
Because like Satchamaraj, he'd have a program, then he'd stick to it.
Oh yeah, I was just exactly thinking that. And then, you know, Satsumaj, I was thinking, I think Prabhupada would really like us too, you know, and then it would be...
Actually, not so good, huh, Satsumaj, not so good, huh? Okay, let's do this. You know, and then Satsumaj just sort of... watch him go loop-to-loop.
But then he would go do something powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
For a while.
They do something else powerful.
Powerful.
Yes.
Still doing that.
Maharaj, I think it was his pastime where Satsang Maharaj, he had joined and Prabhupada wanted to initiate him, and he didn't show up for the initiation.
Yeah.
Do you know more of the details?
Yeah, let me think about that. He stayed away from the initiation. He thought that he wasn't ready, so the first batch got initiated. Maybe
was that the first initiation, Maharaj?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, my
first initiation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he stayed away from that batch. And then what he stayed at his apartment and was doing typing for Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Prabhupada was giving him manuscripts in some form, and his job was to retype them. And so he was dutifully, you know, doing that as much as Prabhupada gave him. That was another, a different time Prabhupada wrote that our Satsrup Maharaj likes to be overloaded with work. Satsrup Maharaj wrote him like that, and Prabhupada said, our Satsrup Maharaj wants to be overloaded with work. Anyway, he was taking this, you know, as much as Prabhupada gave, and then dutifully typing it up and then returning it. And then that's when Prabhupada told him. He gave him these papers. And Prabhupada said, it's not mechanical. He said, but if you love me, then I'll love you. And I don't... Now, is that...
That was after the initiation. Because Satsumara says that he felt he needed more love. If that's how he was thinking. And Prabhupada knew it, because Prabhupada could read lines. It's not mechanical. If you love me, I will love you. And that did it. Then he was ready.
He was bringing Prabhupada mango regularly. Couldn't get a rare thing in New York in those days.
So he took on Ranastami the second one. Mm-hmm. October 23rd.
I remember one time we were at an airport in Boston. Prabhupada was coming. It was, you know, big crowd that time. I forget whether it was just the Boston devotees or... No, it couldn't have been. Must have been people coming from other centers. And there was one of these... We used to do these tumultuous greetings for Prabhupada at the airport, and, you know, have all, like, Krishna arrives in Dwarka, you know, just a huge thing. Drove the airport managers mad. But, so then Prabhupada, you know, all this expectation in Kirtan, finally Prabhupada arrived and came out, and devotees were jumping, and devotees were dancing, and devotees were crying, and devotees were, you know, bouncing off the walls. And I was a little bit in the back. Satsrup Maharaj was there. He muttered, he said, I don't feel anything.
I know what?
He said, I don't feel anything.
Have you visited Satsrup
Maharaj? Yeah. Yeah, I was visiting him in was that Rhode
Stanley
Island?
Falls.
Well, previous place also at Shastras.
Rehoboth.
And now since he's also moved to
Stuyvesant Falls,
I've been visiting him. He's It's great to visit with Satsrup Maharaj. He's very focused, very plugged into what he's doing, very Krishna conscious, really, really good that way. His health is pretty good, all things considered. He manages, still gets headaches, maybe not as much as before. Or not as much as sometimes before.
He's walking?
Yeah. We were taking a walk every day. There's like a little woods down there. It's a wooded area. The whole place is quite rural. It's cornfields and maybe something like Wicklow, but not quite as remote as Wicklow. But very rural. But there's a regular community of devotees, different devotees who live in the neighborhood. But he goes walking every day in that woods. You know, it's like a fixed time. You go from here to there, and it takes this much time. And so it's like a prescribed duty. It's exercise, and I think, and it's nice also. It's pleasant. There's a stretch that's level, so he. I was walking there every day, and his deities are there. Baladev is there, of course, and it's a nice setup there. Simple. He has a little house there. Nice house.
Does he have any plans to come to India sometime, to Mayapur?
Thank you. He didn't say anything about it. It's strenuous for him, I think, at this point. He didn't say anything about coming to India. It's maybe not out of the question, but it's strenuous. It's strenuous for, you know, just being in Mayapur is strenuous when you think about it, you know. It's quite a metropolis here for a little village. There's so many devotees and so many things going on. And then if he travels, then everybody wants to see him and so many things. I hadn't asked him about it. I think he's rather happy to be where he is right now. And he's just gotten there from one point of view. He hasn't been there so long. And it's kind of homey for him. He's comfortable with the devotees who are there, Sachisutta and his family, and the other families who are there. And it's kind of a nice, you know, there's no like regular program and everybody gets together and does something every day. It's just everybody's in the neighborhood. It's like neighbors. You know, like you have neighbors in your previous, you know, before you come to Krishna consciousness, and they're friendly neighbors, and they'll lend you a garden hose or whatever it is you need. So there's a very neighborly sort of relationship. If he needs anything or he wants anything, people will help him out. Otherwise, people leave him alone. If he wants to have a program, that people will come. If he doesn't want to have a program, nobody will say, hey, how come you're not having a program? It's just very... And the people have regard for him there, but they're not groupy. Mm-hmm. It's sane and normal and peaceful and supportive, friendly, relaxed, you know, not taxing. So I think he's really quite contented to be there. And I would think not really looking to, you know, not thinking now where could I go next. But he's close enough to some places like Philadelphia. The train comes right there. So in a couple of hours you're in Philadelphia or you're in New York or you're someplace else in the neighborhood. So when there's like a local Rath Yatra or something like that, then he likes going. And devotees can visit him without too much trouble. Devotees come from New York or devotees come from Philadelphia. So it's sort of far enough away that it's too much trouble unless you really want to go. So it's not, you can just kind of drop in on Satsrut Marsh. But it's not so far that it's... very difficult. Wicklow was, my goodness, you had to go this way and that way and this way and that way and this way and that way to, and finally when you finished going, there was a cartoon in the New Yorker one time. It showed a man and his wife, you know, standing by the side of their car in the middle of these like cornfields on some country road, and the farmer is there and the caption says, "You want to know where you are? I'll tell you where you are. You're nowhere. That's where you are." So that was Wicklow. It was just so far out from every place. But Stuyvesant Falls is remote. It's rural, but the train comes right there, and it's easy to go to.
It's user friendly.
So he can have, so guests can come, and Janmashtami, we have a nice program, Janmashtami and Vyas Puja, devotees come, and he enjoys having the association of devotees. Everything measured, his life is measured, he's doing everything in a regulated way, in accordance with how much strength he has. So I don't know that he But if he wants to, he'll come. He may come. You know, if he feels that it's something he wants to do. But it's not something I fished for and said, Maharaj, would you like to come to India? Because I think it's good for him to be sitting where he is and not unnecessarily taxing himself. He doesn't have the kind of stamina that, say, Prabhupada had in his later years, where Prabhupada could, you know, move around and, you know, or like Jayapataka Maharaj, you know, I mean, they, you know, beat him up and knock him over and practically kill him, and he gets up and says, so let's go to Perth. just has enormous stamina, Jayapataka Maharaj. Satsuru Maharaj is, you know, I mean, Jayapataka Maharaj is built like a Mack truck, you know, he's just enormously formidable, and Satsuru Maharaj is kind of built like a
pencil
or a bicycle or something, you know. We have similar constitutions here where kind of light and can't take that sort of thing. So I think it's good that he's sitting down now in a nice environment where there's facility for his writing, which is, of course, his main service. And he's publishing, that website is there. And it's, every day something is there. It's disruptive. Travel for any of us, when you travel, it's disruptive. And when your health is not good, then it's more disruptive. So there's a penalty in travel. There's a penalty. And, you know, his case, the penalties, when penalties become migraines and that sort of thing, then it can be a serious penalty. So again, if he desires, maybe he will come to India, but he hasn't said anything to me about it. I think the last big move was from Rehoboth to Stuyvesant Falls. That's kind of a big move.
He came 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? He came to Chilpati.
Mm.
2008. January.
So almost 3 years ago.
Mm.
He said he had to double his medication.
Yeah.
Make it through the travel.
Yeah. His medication level is quite low. You know, at times it's been, his doctors were really giving him a lot on the with the consideration that it's better to knock out the headaches than to be drug free. You know, the first thing is to knock the pain down, because the organism can only take so much pain. But now his headaches have been a lot reduced, and his base level medication is quite moderate, and even his like emergency medication, you know, the stuff when a headache comes on, is pretty moderate. You know, sometimes, you know, medication is medication, and it always gives you side effects or something, but it's pretty moderate. So, I mean, I've been with Satsuru Maharaj sometimes where he's taking a lot of medication, and you know, you could see that you're dealing with someone who's taking a lot of medication. But these days, when I visit him, he's clear. He's just taking sort of the minimum that he needs for to go with, and it's not nearly what it was, so that's good. But then, as you say, you know, then he takes a trip, and then the medication has to be increased, and that creates all sorts of trouble. So it's sort of a disincentive for travel.
When he was in Chilpati that time, Radha Maharaj was also there.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of time together. And Satsang Maharaj always wanted to take prasadam, all the devotees took prasadam.
Mm.
So he was sitting there just among everybody. Every meal he was doing like that. So everybody could see him, hear him.
Just in September he was at the Philadelphia Ratiyatra.
Yeah, he usually comes to the Philadelphia Ratiyatra.
He was there and he just sat under a tree. He was in the wheelchair for the whole parade. After we got to the festival site, he sat under a tree. Everybody, whoever wanted to come and see him, you know, he had his books, he had to recite his books.
Answer questions.
Yeah.
It's
really nice.
Yeah.
Teacher Gunan, would you want to say anything?
No, it's too soon.
Anyone else want to?
Someone want to sing some?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Jaya Mishnapadam was pretty tragic charge of Sri Shivadi Si Bhakti Vidanta Shami Raj Bruva the Ki Jai Adanta Koti Vaishnavin the Ki Jai Nama Charger Shri the Haridas Takur Ki Jai Rame Sakaho Shikrishna Chaitan the Prabhu Nitan and the Sri Adaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Go Bhakti Vrindaki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Go Kopinath Sham Kurnagadha Kunigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Navadip Tham ki jai, Ganga Mai ki jai, Jamana Mai ki jai, Usi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Jai Om Vishnu Vlad Padman Supari Raja Kacharja Shtotra Satsri Shumad Satsrup Dasko Shami Raj ki jai, Samaveta Bhakti Brinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, Gaur Primanande.
Actually behind you when you're asking questions.
You're
not that bad.
Oh, I'm at worse. There are two things that struck me my curiosity about Satsarup Maharaj. There are two of them. One of them is the fact that, for example, when I see your picture from the older days and now, there's no difference.
No difference.
No improvement.
What?
No improvement.
He still looks like a light bulb.
Well, what is that?
That's why Johnny, I never met anybody look like a light bulb. He looks like a light bulb.
And
shave our heads, we all look like light bulbs.
and then Satsarup Maharaj, his enemy has changed. From clearly, no? And the other thing that I have tried to appreciate is his painting. I have been able to.
Very mysterious, these paintings.
Unique. It's the combination of incense and Shakti, and there's something that is.
There's a word for that kind of art. What is it called? Excuse me? I think primitive.
Naive.
Naive.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that kind of art has a place within art circles. Yeah. As being, it's not refined art that tries to portray realistically what's seen in the world. It's expressive and simple and unsophisticated.
Innocent.
Sometimes innocent, sometimes complex, but yeah, it's not professional or refined.
Yeah.
It avoids that.
Yeah, it's naivism.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sometimes pretty funny too.
Pretty
funny.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that, but Satsarup Maharaj sometimes has a fantastic sense of humor. Also, it can be really funny.
Mm-hmm.
everywhere. Shaw.
Yes.
Wow.
It's played every day. Maybe that's what it sounds. It sounds good, because we play it every day.
I don't know if it sounds better.
Oh, that's what I heard. You play it a lot. Oh, that's what they said.
I don't feel a brand, but it's...
Custom made. Yeah. 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 I got it from Murari right there. I'm not sure where he got it from. I'm not sure. I think it's local.
Maybe.
I'm not sure where he got it from. He's a
Prabhupada
disciple who sings every day in the town.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard Murari Hardy's
church? I haven't seen him here, though.
Beautiful.
Is he here now?
No, he's here.
I met him today. He was on the bicycle. I met him today.
He plays every day like
4 o'clock, 4:30.
10 to 1, I think.
He's
usually there. 10 to 1.
Yes, 10 to 1 also.
Oh, 10 to 1 also.
Every day.
About a lot of time. 10 to 1 and 4 to 6.
Sasu Maharaj was the first person ever who fell asleep giving Bhagavatam class because he didn't sleep much.
Yeah.
You make a point, then you go down, and sometimes you wouldn't come up. He was so austere.
Chagadish was famous for that. He once gave a class that he never allowed on, and everybody just quietly left after a while.